Hi, and welcome back to another episode of Girls Talk Crime. I'm Jenny, and I'm obviously joined by the angels that are Amy.
Hey.
And Georgia.
Howdy doody.
Oh, it's back. Oh,
I brought it back.
Missed the howdy doody.
It's a Christmas miracle.
So we are recording this on the first week of December. I'm already getting stressed about Christmas. I spent so much money on presents. Because not only is it Christmas for me, it's also my little boy's birthday a week before. So I think I may already have to declare bankruptcy.
I think I'm bankrupt from trying to find a Christmas party outfit. I have gone through so many and I'm just too fat, to be honest.
Thing is, there's these certain like online shops which you'll just never find. Do you know what I mean?
It never fits.
I've shopped on like everyone.
Let's say Moohoo and Misguided.
Yeah, Moohoo's for large people like myself.
Yeah, you need to shop on Moohoo. Yeah, I think the key to find, like, especially an outfit like that for your Christmas party is you need to go to, like, the mall and try loads of stuff on.
It was a nightmare.
And see which one you feel the best in. Because you'd sort of look at the model and go, like, oh, it looks really nice on her, but then...
Yeah, well, basically, I do that. I think, oh, yeah, that would look mint. And then I've ordered it, and then I'm like, oh, wait, I don't look anything like the model.
Yeah, but it's normally down to the cut and the material. Yeah.
It's quite... I'm not going to lie, I've cried so much.
Oh, don't cry.
But what are you having for tea tonight?
Fuck off.
Chicken kebab.
Not my choice.
Kebab. A moment on the lips, a lifetime on the hips.
Okay, so we're going to do our... What did we call it last week?
We haven't came up for a name yet. We need to think of a name. I think all we've got so far is questions.
Yeah.
I was trying to think, but I can't. Girls talk about questions.
Girls talk about questions. How about... I don't have an idea. Right, so this is weekly question time from Girls Talk Crime. And my question to you two is, what is the most disgusting thing that you've ever done?
So I had to turn it down a bit because I was like, oh, I can think of some disgusting things, but I don't think I've even told you guys some of the crazy things. Like, mainly when you're younger, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then I had a little think back and then a few things came to mind. And it's always going to be about puke, piss or poo, really, isn't it? So we'll go for a piss one.
The three P's.
The three P's. So P number one is, I wasn't even pregnant. This was like before children. But I went to my friend's house. I wanted to use the toilet. They didn't have a lock on their bathroom door.
Yeah.
So I thought, do you know what? I'm not going to go because they have like their kids home. So I was like, oh, I don't want like anyone's like walking on me. So I was like, it's only like a half an hour journey home, I'll just pee when I get home. And then I got stuck in loads of traffic and then I panicked. And you know when like you need a piss and you think you're gonna piss yourself, but it's never that bad?
Yeah.
But it got that bad. So I sat in my Clio at the time and I just had to just say to myself, just do it.
You just pissed.
So I did. So I rang, I was like on the phone and it was so warm and like gross and I could feel it all going down my legs and then it was like dripping into my shoe. It was literally, I've never pissed so much in my life. And I phoned and I was like, I've just pissed myself. And he's like, what do you mean? I was like, I've just had to piss myself. Like, I was, why didn't you get out of the car? I go to the toilet. I was like, because I'm stuck in traffic, so I had to piss myself. And it was fucking disgusting. It was gross, but I had to. And I was so stressed and so, like, trying to get home.
It's better than a poo.
Better than a poo, exactly.
Yeah.
But I went for a bus lane and got a fucking £60 fine.
Oh my god!
Is that the classic Amy picture?
Yeah, that is when the picture happened.
No.
I think this might have been somewhere else, actually.
That picture's fucking funny, though. That one makes me laugh. Just... little Amy in her Clio, like, shoot! Driving in the bus lane where there's all this traffic.
I love how you pissed yourself, tried to get home, and ended up with a fine. Piss fine.
Yeah. But it's like karma, wasn't it? Like, you pissed yourself, you're gross, have a £60 fine. Oh. It might have been £80.
But then was the piss, the relief, was it worth £60? Was it worth £60 for that relief?
I couldn't have physically held it. I didn't have a choice, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unless I would have stopped and got out and pissed in front of everyone.
I do have a story, but as I said to you guys earlier, we discussed what questions. I'm not sharing it. It's a bit minging. But I know I am. Well, the thing is, it was an accident. It wasn't like on purpose from being, as you guys call me, lazy. But we're not going into that one. I had around my house, wasn't it, Amy? Mm-hmm. And we decided to, I'm pretty sure we, for some reason, we had shots. We were sat on my kitchen floor and then we all did a shot and I choked on mine.
Thing is, at the time as well, we would have been, I want to say like 14, 15. So it wasn't like you have a choice of what you drink. It was whatever shots you get hold of, do you know what I mean?
You drink them.
Yeah, so it was disgusting. And yeah. I know I tried slamming it back and I choked on it. And then I remember just sitting there like patting my chest like,
ooh, yeah.
Ooh. That went down wrong. And I remember sitting like that for a little while and then I went, nah, I'm going to be sick. And I remember going, nah, I'm going to be sick. And I got up and I covered my mouth because I was like, I'm going to be sick. And I covered it like with both my hands. Like, I don't even know, like the see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil type of cover my mouth. Yeah. And it just came spraying out of my mouth through my fingers like a fan of sick, like a water fountain.
Yeah. Is like a shower.
Because it came out. Yeah, it came out like that. Through my fingers. It was proper projectile vomit and Amy was pissing herself laughing. I remember that much. Whilst my other friend doesn't like sick at all. She's there like in the corner. I'm like spraying. I sprayed all over the worktops, all over the wall, all over my brand new Adidas. I got cream all over my JD spots. But it was vile.
Jenny, what's yours?
So the first one, I don't know if this really counts because I was young, but I think I must have, God, how old would I be? Maybe 7, something like that. I think I must have tried to flush something down the toilet like a toy. And my mum came up and she was like, you must never flush big things down the toilet. It's silly, it's going to break the toilet. Anyway, I then, that day or the next day, whenever it was, did like a massive poo and panicked like I'm going to get in trouble if I flush this down the toilet. So with my hand I fished it out and put it in the bin. So I put it in like the little bathroom bin. But the thing is, I don't think I actually told my mum I'd done it. I just put it in there and it took her a good day to notice. She went, what is that smell? And she opened the bin and just smush poo in the bin.
Who put shit in the bin?
Disgusting. Yeah.
Your mum has some classic one-liners, I must admit.
You may not remember, but was there a bag in the bin? Or was it like, you know, you just put stuff straight into the plastic?
I would say there was probably a bag in there. My mum's pretty good with, like, a bag in the bin. But, yeah, so I did that. Even though I was so young, I can remember the feeling of, like, holding my own poo. Just holding it in my hand and it being, like, warm and wet. But, like, hard. It was like a proper sausage poo.
So it was a healthy poo.
It was a healthy one. It was massive, though. So, yeah, those are our disgusting stories. If you've got any disgusting stories, email us at girlstalkcrime@gmail.com. Today's episode is a little bit different from what we've done before. This is our first episode on an abduction. This is the case of Colleen Stan, aka the girl in the box. So let's get cracking. Colleen Stan was born on December 31st, 1956, in Oregon, USA. She was 20 years old at the time of her disappearance. On the 19th of May, 1977, Colleen decided to surprise her best friend for her birthday by travelling all the way to Northern California. The only problem was, shortly before her trip, Colleen's car had broken down. Now, Oregon to California is around 600 miles, and with no car, Colleen decided to hitchhike the 600-mile trip instead of calling it off. Now, this was the 70s, and hitchhiking wasn't uncommon, but what I do find scary is not only you risking your safety by getting into a stranger's car, but there were no mobile phones like we have today, so Colleen's family would have no idea how far she was in her trip, or if she was even safe, unless she was able to stop somewhere where they had a payphone and update them.
I've got in a stranger's car once.
Have you?
Because I was walking down a road and I was really ill. I wasn't hungover, I was genuinely ill. And I was like throwing up in the gutter. And some guy came out and he's like, oh my God, are you okay?
And I was like, and he was like, oh, my friend's just really ill. He's like, let me take you where you need to go, let me take, and then I was like, okay. Stupidest thing I've ever done, but I lived. It was literally only down the road.
I was going to say, how old would you have been then?
13, maybe.
But did he take you home, I take it?
Obviously. Well, no, I'm dead, Jenny.
Oh.
I'm speaking from beyond the grave. You're hallucinating.
Also, they never really used phones, then they wouldn't know what they're missing.
Yeah, it's true.
Mm.
I mean, like when we were younger, it was like you organised to meet somewhere. Before we would have had mobile phones, you'd call each other on their house phone and be like, right, we're going to meet at in town by Primark at 10 o'clock. And you just go there and wait, don't you? And if no one turns up, then you just go in. Where now it's like leaving in 5 minutes, 2 minutes away. Yeah. Are you there?
I'm here. Can't see you. Where are you too?
Can't see you. Where are you too?
Okay.
even more embarrassing about our group chat is... We've gone beyond actually just sending a message. We just send voice memos. We're just like ultimate lazy.
So it was around midday and Colleen was halfway there and in a town called Red Bluff. She'd probably only been 2 to 3 hours left to cover before she reached her destination and she was waiting for her next ride. Now Colleen didn't just jump into any car. She was pretty choosy with who she picked and had no problem in saying no or turning down a ride. Apparently, she turned down 2 cars while waiting in Red Bluff. So clearly, a sensible girl. So when a car with a young family pulled up, Colleen felt much more comfortable accepting the ride.
The family was made up of a married couple, Cameron and Janice Hooker, and their 8-month-old baby. The couple was only a few years older than Colleen, so clearly at first sight, Colleen thought, yeah, this looks like a safe ride. I instantly thought, if I was going to hitchhike, I would aim for a couple of people like that.
Yeah.
Like, you see these films and it's like the creepy trucker driver guy and you're like, ew, gross.
Don't get in with him.
Oh, but it's a mistake. A good looking couple with an 8-month baby. Like, you would do it, wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a safe ride and I thought, I was kind of thanking my lucky stars. Oh, this is just wonderful, you know.
To begin with, Colleen and the couple barely spoke. They didn't know each other, so awkward silence is to be expected. But one thing that did start to make Colleen feel slightly uncomfortable was how Cameron kept checking her out in the rearview mirror. After a while, they pulled over at a gas station and Colleen decided to use the toilet.
This voice inside me just kept telling me to jump out the window and run and never look back. And I thought, why do I feel this way? Why do I want to do this?
Colleen decided to ignore her inner voice and go back into the car with the Hooker family and they continued their journey.
After just a few moments of being back on the road, Cameron turned down an off-road lane. When they reached the end of this lane, Cameron pulled over and switched off the engine. The family got out the car, leaving Colleen in the back seat. It looked like Janice and the baby had walked over to look at a creek, and Colleen assumed that Cameron had gone with them. But a split second later, Cameron had jumped in the back seat next to Colleen, and he had a knife in his hand which he held to her throat and said, "Are you going to do what I say?" And Colleen, fearing for her life, agreed. With this, Cameron proceeded to blindfold, gag and handcuff Colleen. He then grabbed a small wooden box that had been on the seat next to Colleen. This box had hinges and an X-shaped hole at the base. Cameron opened the box and attached it to Colleen's head. At this point, I would be panicking that I was about to be the star of the new Saw movie.
Cameron had threatened Colleen and pushed her to lie down across the back seat of the car, out of sight. The inside of the head box was lined with carpet to muffle any screams. So to summarise, Colleen was gagged, blindfolded, handcuffed, and had a wooden box strapped over her head. This is when Colleen felt the car restart and drive back up the lane. After a long and terrifying journey, they arrived at the family's home, back in Red Bluff, California.
Cameron took Colleen from the car and led her into the house and down into the basement. Cameron proceeded to remove all of Colleen's clothes and stood her on an icebox. He also removed the box from her head, leaving her still blindfolded and gagged. He then attached her wrists to the hooks of the ceiling. With no warning, he then kicked the box from underneath her, leaving Colleen suspended from the ceiling by her wrist. In shock, Colleen began to scream. To punish her, Cameron pulled out a whip and went on to physically torture Colleen for hours. When he was done, he removed Colleen's wrists from the ceiling and reattached the box to her head and locked her wrists to either side of the box. He then sat Colleen on the icebox and left her in the basement.
That head box thing attached to the top of it, and he put that around my head. and he had connected my wrist up to the sides of the box, and he left me there like that all night. And I was in so much pain, my wrist hurt, and I just thought, I'm gonna die.
Now, what is scary about this is that Colleen's friends and family had no idea that she'd been taken. They assumed that she was still hitchhiking, and the friend that she was going to see had no idea she was even due to arrive because it was a birthday surprise. So no alarm bells were raised until 4 days had passed and Colleen hadn't been in touch or arrived home. Colleen's roommates, concerned, contacted Colleen's parents to see if maybe she had stopped off there on the way back. It was at this point the family became aware that Colleen was missing and they began to search. They started to drive the hundreds of miles between Oregon and California, searching the towns in between to see if anyone had come across Colleen. Police were contacted, but they had no leads. It was as if Colleen had vanished into thin air.
Fortunately, I was just thinking that someone has probably killed her. It was like she just disappeared off the face of the earth.
So Colleen could have been anywhere between Oregon and California, over a 700-mile radius. It was clear at this point that it was going to be a lengthy and hard search for police. But the whole time this was going on, and Colleen's family and friends searched and searched, she was being kept naked, blindfolded, in a wooden coffin-like box for around 23 hours per day. And when she was let out, she was tortured by Cameron.
Cameron and Janice continued family life as nothing was wrong. He would go to work during the week and she would stay at home with the baby. But every evening Cameron was to return, he would rush straight down to the basement to torture Colleen, and he would often photograph these attacks. Cameron would attach Colleen to a device he called the rack and give her electric shock. This routine continued for months, with Colleen being kept in a box for most of the day and only being let out to be abused by Cameron.
So now, with it being months since any of Colleen's family or friends had seen or heard from her, they began to fear the worst. How could she just disappear? Colleen's mother even sent her dental records to the police and the coroner's office, just in case the body showed up. This shows how much faith the family had lost in finding Colleen alive. Back in the basement, the abuse continued, mainly by Cameron, but sometimes observed by his wife, Janice.
After over 8 months of this treatment, in January 1978, Cameron removed the blindfold from Colleen. Yes, that's right, you heard us correctly. She was blindfolded for 8 months. And for the first time since entering the house, he allowed Colleen out of the cellar and up to the main house, to under the stairs, you know, an understairs cupboard, which he called the workshop. And in the workshop, Cameron kept an extensive collection of BDSM magazines, and one of these he handed to Colleen.
Had an article about the slave trade and these slave owners and all this, and I thought, oh my god, this is real, you know?
He then gave Colleen a contract and wanted her to sign it. And in this contract, it talked about an organization of slave owners called the Company. He told Colleen that she needed to sign this contract in order to stay with him and Janice. And if she didn't sign it, then she would be given a much worse slave master, part of the Company.
In this contract, it stated that Colleen must submit her full being to any and all desires of her master being Cameron, and Colleen signed this along with Cameron, but he signed it under an alias of Michael Powers. Cameron also told Colleen that the Company was always watching her, and that if she ever attempted to escape, they would kill her and her whole family. And from then on, Colleen would be known and referred to as K. Not K the name, just the letter K. We don't really know the significance of that letter K was, but maybe it has some sort of meaning to Cameron, or it's just to strip away as much of Colleen's identity as possible.
They do that with Men in Black.
No, his name's K.
Yeah, I remember, like, Agent K. Yeah, Agent K, Agent J.
Oh, I thought it was generally called K.
M. Agent M, they just give you a letter.
I guess that's the Company and all that. It is quite a...
Yes, no, it's just to strip your identity.
Colleen was forced to address Cameron as master, and she could only speak if he gave her permission. After his contract was signed, Colleen's treatment did slightly improve. She was still being kept in the box, but she was now able to wear clothes instead of always being naked, and she was no longer blindfolded. But this was also the time that Cameron first raped Colleen, a whole 8 months after her imprisonment.
That's quite a long time, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I know.
You expect that to have happened sooner.
I know, I did as well, especially as he kept her naked, like, very, like, sexualized,
it's
almost, like,
to do,
you know,
plan, isn't it?
Being pinned up. 1 year after her abduction, in May 1978, the Hooker family decided to move to a mobile home while Colleen was still in their captivity. And due to the lack of basement in a mobile home, Cameron had to build a new box to hide Colleen in. This box was built to fit into the frame under the couple's waterbed. And there, again, Colleen would spend the majority of her day for the next 2 years. So she would have been subject to every small detail of the couple's private life. Now, at this stage, Colleen's freedom did get extended by a small amount. Cameron and Janice would let her out of the box a little bit more and get Colleen to help them around the house with cleaning and gardening. And during this time, Cameron and Janice went on to have a second child. So Colleen was let out to help Janice care for this new child. It was also around this time that Cameron started to build what he would call the dungeon, where he was planning to keep Colleen along with many other women that he was planning on kidnapping.
Dug this big hole underneath a shed in the backyard. It was like his fantasy. He always wanted to get other women.
Sometimes Colleen was also let out to do these jobs unsupervised, but despite this, Colleen never tried to escape. There was plenty of phones around and neighbours, but she never tried to call for help. She would finish her chores and then get back into the box. And this box under the bed could only be accessed by getting on your hands and knees and crawling in, meaning that Colleen would willingly enter this box, which is clearly out of fear. She had to go in there herself.
In 1980, Colleen was still being held captive and being tortured pretty much on a daily basis for almost 4 years. And by this point, she had gained Cameron's trust, enough for him to allow her to make a phone call home. He told Colleen that the company was still watching her family and that they had her phones tapped, so they would be listening to everything she said. So Colleen, out of fear, did not say anything that might put her family at danger. So she called her house back in Oregon, and the person to answer was Colleen's sister, Bonnie.
In the company, I believed he was in this company. I believed that they would do horrible things to me if I went against him or if I tried to run away.
Now, let's not forget that Colleen had been missing for almost 4 years, and the family had no idea what happened to her. No leads or nothing. So for a phone call to come out of the blue, and for this to be Colleen, must have been overwhelming. So it was obvious that Bonnie had a ton of questions for Colleen. But because Colleen was so fearful of the company and what they might do to her family if she had said the wrong thing, she didn't say much at all. She just told Bonnie that she was all right and that she missed them and she loved them all. Colleen's family never contacted the authorities after this phone call, as Colleen told them that she was fine, and she said that herself.
Now, for a few months after this phone call, Cameron actually allowed Colleen to have a trip to visit her family. So the pair of them turned up to Colleen's family home unannounced, and Cameron introduced himself as Colleen's new boyfriend, under his favourite fake name, Michael Powers. He left Colleen with her family for 1 day, so just 24 hours, under the pretense he had to attend a convention on the area, and then pick her up the next day.
And the family just swarmed around her and hugged her and kissed her. And my first thoughts were, oh my God, she's so skinny, she's so thin and so pale.
Colleen's family avoided over-questioning her and instead just enjoyed the time they had with their daughter after 4 years. They didn't want to scare her off again. And Colleen didn't give her family much information about where she'd been and what she was planning on doing. She was so brainwashed by Cameron and fully believed that the company was watching her.
So the next afternoon, Cameron came by and picked Colleen up. Cameron told the family that they were about to move house, and as soon as they were in and settled, they would send the family the new address. They shared an emotional goodbye, and one family member snapped a photo of Colleen and Cameron cuddled up together, posing as any young couple in love would. It could be possible that Colleen was suffering with Stockholm Syndrome, falling in love with their captor. And as the pair arrived back to the trailer, Colleen was locked back in the box under the bed. And for the next 3 years, Colleen was back to being locked in the box for around 23 hours a day and was only let out to use the bathroom and sometimes to eat and drink. It was now 1983 and Colleen had been held by Cameron for 6 years. In a documentary I watched, they explain how when she was in the box, she sometimes was given like a bedpan. It's almost like a coffin she's kept in. And to pee, she would like hook this bedpan up with her feet and like pull her trousers down to like pee in it and then like kick it back down the end.
So it was in 1983 that Janice Hooker took an interest in Christianity. I think someone's feeling a little bit a little bit guilty. She started to read the Bible constantly. Now, Colleen was actually a devout Christian, and sometimes when Cameron was at work, Janice would let Colleen out of the box and the two of them would read the Bible together. And over this, the two women developed a friendship. After a while of this, Cameron began to allow the two women to go to church together once a week. With this newfound faith, Janice's heart opened up and she started to realise she needed to do something about the situation. At this point, Cameron decided that he would like to make Colleen his second wife. He had grown very attached to her after the last 6 years, and so he let her go out and get a job at a local motel as a maid. Odd. So odd.
So random, isn't it?
So now Colleen had a job and she was allowed to go to church. So she was being seen in public and had a lot of different contacts with different people. She could have exposed her situation to any one of these people, but still, out of fear and brainwashing for so many years, Colleen said nothing. On August the 9th, 1984, Colleen had been held by the hookers for 7 years. And finally, Janice cracked. She admitted to Colleen that Cameron had been lying to her the whole time about being part of the company. He actually had no connection to any organisation like that. Although Janice did maintain that the company was a real thing.
And this whole time, the fear of the company had been the only thing keeping Colleen there and stopping her from running away or flagging someone to her situation. Colleen had so many opportunities to escape over the years, but she hadn't dared, out of fear that the company would harm or kill her family. And so the next morning, Colleen tried it. She made it to the local bus station, where she called Cameron from a payphone at the bus station and said,
"I'm leaving, and you can't stop me." And he got really upset, and he was crying. And I just hung up the phone, and I got on the bus, and I left.
She returned back to her home in Oregon on the bus and just picked up her old life as if nothing had ever happened. She didn't tell her family what had been happening for the last 7 years, and she didn't contact the police, which I just find baffling. You've been told it's a lie. I'd be like, you have taken 7 years of my life. Fuck you. But obviously, there's a lot of deep psychological stuff why she hasn't done that. But it's just baffling, isn't it, that she could just go back and not tell anyone. Not tell anyone what's happened to her. But the first person I'd ring, I'd be like, Georgia, you'd never guess what's been happening to me for the last 7 years. And over the first few months, Colleen actually kept in contact with Cameron, mainly because she felt like he had the ability to reform and become a better human being.
So after Janice confessed, the police managed to track down Colleen Stan 570 miles away, because of course she's already escaped, she's been out for however long and now it's all unfolded.
Yeah.
Where she was peacefully trying to live her normal life again. Forget about the last 7 years.
Police were confused at first, as Colleen appeared to be functioning normally, and didn't show in... Hang on. Police were confused at first, as Colleen appeared to be functioning normally, and didn't show any emotional scars from being held captive for 7 years. Now, that's not what you'd expect from a victim of abduction, torture, rape, imprisonment and brainwashing. But hey-ho, you know, the mind is a mystery. And due to the way that Colleen was behaving, police didn't initially believe Janice Hooker's story. But Colleen did tell her story to the police, and they had no choice but to believe the two women. So Cameron Hooker was arrested and put into police custody. While this was happening, and because Janice was the one who told Colleen the truth, which resulted in her escape, she was actually granted immunity, and if she agreed to testify against her husband, she would not have to face any jail time.
I don't know if I really agree with that. I think it's a good thing. She has been a bystander for the last 7 years and could have done something 7 years ago. But yeah, she did get her out. But yeah, you don't know what sort of trauma she's gone through. During the trial, it came out that there was nothing in Cameron Hooker's past that would result in him committing this crime. Nothing to indicate that he might turn out this way. Because he had like a pretty normal childhood. He didn't, you know, there was no sort of abuse in his childhood. You know, no sort of like disrupted family. Normal, standard upbringing. Yeah, he's just born evil. Both properties that the Hooker's family had lived in over the last 7 years that they'd been holding Colleen captive were searched, and there was so much evidence. They found leather restraints, 2 head boxes, the stretcher device that Colleen was strapped to, hooks in the ceiling, hundreds of pornographic magazines, like violent bondage. Yeah, I don't know what I've written there. Patriotic.
Petrographic.
Petrographic magazines. That's obviously autocorrect. Hundreds of pornographic magazines, which were mainly violent bondage. Violent bondage.
Violent Bombay.
Violent Bombay mix.
Violent Bombay mix.
Photos of Colleen being tortured and an undeveloped roll of film with similar images on it. So you can imagine, as soon as this case was made public and the media got hold of it, things went wild. People couldn't get enough of this horrific, almost unbelievable story. So the trial had started in December 1984, and Cameron was up for over 18 different charges, of course including kidnap, rape, etc.
Cameron Hooker pled not guilty to every single one.
What a prick.
Twat.
And he claimed that Colleen was a willing participant and all the acts were consensual. Now, there was evidence that Cameron could use to back up his claims. There was a photo of them cuddling up at her parents' house. Now, she returned to the Hooker house with him after a full day and night with her family and didn't tell them what was going on. Now, she never attempted to escape or tell anyone what was going on during those 7 years. And finally, how when she escaped, she just returned home. She still didn't tell anyone, and she also kept in contact with him. She had a job, she went to church. All of these points Cameron was using to back up his story that Colleen was not held against her will.
So the prosecutor fought these claims by saying that she was just brainwashed by Cameron Hooker, and how she was so scared by the threat of the company and what they might do to her family and the possibility of having Stockholm Syndrome, which is what we've been saying all along. Now, Stockholm Syndrome is defined as feelings of trust or affection felt in cases of kidnapping by a victim towards their captor. And this was evident in the way that when Colleen did return home, where she was safe and it was over, she still kept that contact with Cameron, out of choice. So this would also explain why she never went to the police and what had happened to her. Not because it was consensual, but because she was brainwashed. In September 1985, Cameron's second trial began, and for the first time, and the first witness called to the stand was his wife, Janice Hooker. Loads of evidence was presented in court, just to help show the jury the extent of which Colleen had been kept and tortured. The head boxes and the cuffs and multiple other restraint devices. But the main piece of evidence was the contract.
And this piece of evidence would mark the point in which Colleen would have given up and she began to be brainwashed by Cameron. They said in the court how Cameron had actually found this contract in one of his bondage magazines. A replica of the box under the bed was also brought into the court, and the jury were encouraged to crawl in and lie down to get an idea of how Colleen had been kept for up to 23 hours a day for nearly 7 years.
I imagine that was quite traumatic for some of the jury as well.
I can imagine it being very, like, it would open their eyes to actually, because you can hear about these things, but imagine getting in that, you would feel that fear and then be like, imagine having that fear for 23 hours a day for 7 years. Colleen Stam was called to testify herself, and she gave a very thorough account of the whole 7 years that she was held captive by Cameron Hooker from start to finish. After Colleen's emotional and detailed testimony of what she had endured, it was going to be very hard for Cameron and his attorney to argue that this was consensual.
Even though she never kind of went to the police when she went home, I'm sure she was kind of thinking of this moment over and over in her head.
Of what she would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would be fantasising about the day you get to go home, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Or even like something really bad happens and you think, I need to remember that detail.
Yes.
Yeah.
I do that when I'm driving along. Like, if I see two girls and they look really young, I'm like, oh, she's wearing a purple jacket, she's wearing a black one. That's it's around 11:15 in the morning.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly.
It's good and it's bad at the same time.
Yeah. It's paranoia, isn't it? It's a lot of paranoia.
It was at this point that a load of love letters were sent from Colleen to Cameron were presented to the court. And if anything was going to prove her consent, it was these letters. Colleen confirmed under oath that this was her handwriting and that she was the one who wrote these letters. It was something that she had never told anyone before. One of them read, "I seem to be falling deeper and deeper in love with you with each passing day." And this could indicate that there were some emotional feelings between Colleen and Cameron.
Colleen claimed that the only reason she ever sent those letters to Cameron was because the nicer she was to him, the nicer he was to her in return. And yeah, in one aspect I was going to say I can kind of understand that, but... So the prosecution brought in psychologists to help explain how Colleen could have been so brainwashed and manipulated by Cameron. The kidnapping, the torture, the rape, the threats against her family safety, all of these things add up and heavily contribute to someone losing control over their own life. 3 weeks into his trial, Cameron Hooker was called to the stand. He maintained that he did kidnap Colleen, but after a few months had passed, Colleen had fallen in love with him. And from then, the whole thing was consensual for the next 7 years. Cameron's attorney also brought in their own psychologist to argue against the case of brainwashing claims.
After a 5-week trial, the jury began their deliberation, and it took them almost a week to come up with the verdict. But they found Cameron Hooker guilty of the kidnap of Colleen Stan and guilty of the rape of Colleen Stan on the stretcher. The judge gave Cameron 2 consecutive life terms.
Colleen Stan straight away went out and tried to get herself a normal life again, despite her family and friends telling her to take it easy after all she'd been through. So I'm guessing this would have been the first time her family would have found out as well.
Yeah, and they're just saying, take some time, you know?
Yeah.
Recover from it. And she's like, no, wait. I've been held captive all this time. I want to have a fucking life. Fair enough.
Yeah. But she just wanted to get back out there and live the life that she had stolen from her at the age of 20. Colleen studied for an accounting degree and she went on to get married, but later did divorce. But out of the marriage, she did have a daughter called Danielle. And Colleen has since used her stories and experiences to campaign against abused and abducted women, and she has also volunteered at a helpline.
Cameron Hooker was denied parole in 2015. His next parole hearing will be in 2022. But it's of a popular... Yeah, it's not long, is it? 2 years? But it's of a popular view that Cameron Hooker will never get out of prison. Well, that is the end of this week's episode, guys. Thank you so much for listening as normal. Please do drop us an email if you've got any constructive criticism, anything you really liked that we've done, you know, give us some feedback on our question of the week, because we've actually been very much enjoying doing that. And go and follow us on all of these social media platforms. We have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Is that everything we've got?
Discussion group on Facebook as well.
Yeah, we got a discussion group on Facebook, which there are no discussions on, so if someone could
even if you just share some cases on there, like, you don't have to talk on there, just
yeah,
things that you think, oh, this is interesting, this has happened in the news.
Yeah, that's a good yeah idea.
And then that kind of starts a bit of interest there. Exactly. I might start doing that, I might just discuss with myself on the discussion page.
Shall we all just go and make like catfish profiles and talk to each other?
Oh, amazing.
On our discussion page. It'd be brilliant.
Should we do our next episode on the catfish one?
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
Let us know what you think of that.
Yeah, also guys, it is coming up to Christmas. I know we said this at Halloween to tell us about any Halloween cases that you may have heard of. Black Christmas
a real case, or is that fake?
Probably fake. But yeah, if you know any Christmassy ones, let us know. Murdery Santas, frostbite. Oh, I'm sure there are some. But yeah, it's 11 o'clock. We're all proper hanging. Yeah, George needs to have a shower. I got my Christmas party tomorrow and
I need to fake tan?
Well, I'm not going to fake tan because I can't be bothered with all that.
sounds
really disgusting, but I really need to cut and paint my toenails before I go to bed because I'm not going to have time tomorrow.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye! Bye.